so excited to have you, Aida. I've been following you for a long time, and I just think that you're an incredible resource for families that want to live in a more non-toxic way and have an environment in their home that's low tox. So I'm happy to have you here so that we can spread awareness and that listeners can learn from you. And also, I'm super excited to get to know you a little bit better. I feel like I know you because I've been following you since the non-toxic munchkin days, but to get to talk face to face is really nice. So
it's exciting. Well, thank you for having me. First of all, I'm a big fan too of your app. And I think that what you're doing is brilliant. You're just making this whole process of low tox living easier, which is ultimately the goal that I think we share. So I love that. And thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Well, what I found so interesting when I was reading about a little bit of your bio is that you have a background in investigative journalism. So just really curious, how did you get into that and what type of topics did you cover? It sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Well, that was, I mean, now it feels like it was a lifetime ago, but I worked for many years as an investigative journalist. I worked in journalism. I did news journalism, and I guess what I share and what I brought to what I'm doing now is that when you're a journalist, you really go deep into research. You know, whatever the topic at hand is, you become like a semi-expert, especially when you're producing longer format pieces, which is what I was doing back then. And so I've always been kind of nerdy in that way. I kind of enjoy going deep. And
yeah.
So that was, you know, that's what I would do on a daily basis back then. And then what the transition really came when I became pregnant. And I think that's something that very often happens with so many of us who stumble onto this low tox living life. I became pregnant. I already had a base of why, you know, or how environmental toxins can affect our health. My mother had had breast cancer, and she had already done some research in that, and she would share everything with me. But it was really when I became pregnant that I became, you know, it just, what came naturally was to research. And I started researching and researching. And the more I knew, the more, for lack of a better word, the more freaked out I became at that point. And because it was a lot, and the more you know, the more you know, and then you can't unknow what you know. So that's how I started this whole life. I started writing everything down, kind of organizing my thoughts. And that's how the blog, which was back then Non-Toxic Munchkin, was born. So it was really using, it was a very natural transition because I was using what I had always used, my research, but just focusing it on something that I was very passionate about at that point in my life.
Yeah, I can completely relate. I mean, pregnancy was what launched me into this space sort of out of nowhere, because you just suddenly you're aware of everything around you. And if you have that curiosity, I mean, you can just run with it, and there's so much to learn. And I think that there's this perception that baby stuff is safe. And so then once you have the baby, you start to buy all these things. And so I love that what you're sharing is geared towards families and babies. And it just lets people know that you do have to question all of the things that you bring into your home. If you can't assume because it's for baby or because it's for pregnancy, that it's safe, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, what I eventually learned is that that's the period in life when you're most vulnerable also to all these toxins, during pregnancy and early, like infancy and childhood. And it was shocking. And this was, you know, my oldest son right now is 13, almost 14 years old. So this was a while back, and things back then were really hard to find. It was really hard to find clean, truly low tox products. I mean, this is the time when, you know, BPA-free plastic, which we can get into later, that was still being used. I used BPA-free plastic bottles on my first son because I thought that was the safer alternative. Nowadays, we know that that's not a safer alternative. But back then, no one had any idea what BPF or BPS, which are all the other substitute chemicals and similar to BPA, what any of that was. I don't even think that science knew that yet at that point, or maybe a few scientists did, but it wasn't by no means mainstream or even in the periphery. So
I believe it. I mean, my kids are just turned 9 and I felt like it was really hard to find clean products when they were young. So I can even imagine go back 5 years and it was not, it's hard to remember, but it was not trendy. There was no clean, there was no green.
And a lot of the products that were available for like makeup, for example, they were, it was bad. It wasn't good. It was not good.
It didn't work. That's
it didn't
true.
Work. We've come such a long way.
Do you mind if I stop you with the bottles though? Because I think that a lot of people might hear you say BPA-free plastic bottles and think that that's safe. Can you talk about what they should be doing instead and why maybe it's not?
Yeah. So BPA-free plastic in general, what it means is that it's a plastic that doesn't have bisphenol, BPA, right? Which is an endocrine disrupting chemical that we know it affects our health and our endocrine, which is our hormone system, at even very low levels. The problem is that when you see a label called like BPA free, it's still plastic, which means it still needs some sort of plastic chemical, something that'll give it the same look and feel. And what most people, most companies end up using is that they use substitute chemicals that are chemically very similar, molecularly, if you want to go to that level, to BPA. It's a substitute chemical, but because it's so similar to BPA, the most common substitutes are BPS, BPF, these new chemicals have the same issues with our health. They still affect our endocrine system, our hormones. So the better alternative really is to just avoid plastic in general as much as you can. And people sometimes, they get worried. They're like, how can I give my baby, you know, a glass bottle, which would be a better alternative. But nowadays, you know, you have glass bottles that come, they might be covered in silicone to protect it if you're actually giving it to your child. Obviously, when it's a small baby, you're probably holding the glass bottle anyway, you know, so that's the better alternative. Stainless steel, maybe for travel, would be a better alternative also, you know, but generally speaking, you want to, especially for baby products, just avoid plastic. I think if you just stick to avoiding plastic as much as possible, whether it's at mealtime, whether it's baby bottles, whether it's toys, you know, for those first months, years, as much as you can avoid that, that's you're doing a good job in terms of avoiding really harmful toxins.
Yeah, that's a great helpful tip. I mean, it's that regrettable substitution that unfortunately we see amongst the categories, not just the plastic.
It's not only, because
they're not testing these chemicals in advance. One of the things that, or I was curious, when did you transition from like doing this for your own family to like helping other families? Because I know you offer consults and then you have your website, which I definitely want to talk about that in detail. But when did you have the time or figure out how to help people?
I never have the time.
Right.
We make it work.
Yeah.
So I did start the blog, like I said, started for myself. It was a way for me to organize my thoughts. And of course, back then I had a lot of friends who were having babies and they started learning, you know, I would talk to them about it and they were also getting overwhelmed. So I started sharing that and they shared it with their friends. At that point in my life, I ended up moving. I was living in Mexico City. We moved to New York and I kind of continued with that blog and it was more word of mouth. Instagram didn't exist back then. It was very much a blogging world. I feel very old right now.
No. It is. It's hard to believe Instagram is like the place where we're sharing all of this. I mean, it's where everybody's getting information now, but
yeah. I mean, podcasts didn't exist. It's just changed. But yeah. So at some point in New York, when I was living in New York, which was already almost 10 years ago, I started working one-on-one with families. Then once I came here to California, which is where I live now, then I had a little bit more time and I was able to focus more, not only on families, but then I spent a couple of years working with some companies, helping them just, there was different companies. One, it was helping them source the right ingredients for their products. They wanted to make sure, you know, they had clean ingredients. And then I also helped other companies. It was a children's company. They sell all kinds of products for children and just helping them establish kind of like a chemical policy for the whole company and making sure that everything that they sold met these standards.
That's amazing. And it's like a real, I love that it's such an impactful thing to do, to get at the source.
I love that
too. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, I love working one-on-one with families because I get to meet people and work with them and help them. And often I get young moms who are just very overwhelmed. So it's very rewarding to work with them and help them you know, just work through it and understand where to prioritize and all that. But working with companies is extremely rewarding because you do have that bigger impact. And also, you're also helping them create a place where mothers like us, we can go source healthy things for our children. So that's really rewarding too. It's they're two different things, but I really enjoy them both.
Yeah. So what does a family consult look like? Do you go in the home and assess everything or...
Yeah. So pre-COVID, it was in person.
Okay.
And I loved it. And it was local. Post-COVID, we do a lot. I do most of them via Zoom, or sometimes I'll do a 1-hour consult on the phone. And I really tailor it depending on what the client needs. Sometimes it's an hour of just questions, you know, back-to-back questions, and we get through them all. Sometimes it's a family who's taking on a new reconstruction process. Either they're building a new home or they're renovating and they have questions specifically tailored to that.
Which is an excellent time for people listening to really to be focused on during reconstruction. There's so much to think about. That's a great
so much point. To think about. And this is really a big impact. You know, if you pick the right materials, you can really have a good positive impact on your overall health. And it's because the chemicals in construction material can be so harmful. So by knowing how to choose the right products and the right materials, you can really, really just decrease, you know, exposure significantly on a daily basis. But it's really overwhelming. I think, you know, like it's a whole other world of construction material. And, you know, if you've ever worked with a contractor, they're not always eager to try new products. So I kind of try to advise them on how to present it to the contractor, et cetera. So, often the contractors are surprised. They're surprised at how well products nowadays work. Cleaner
really?
Products.
That's encouraging. Yeah. And then they can maybe take that on to the next project. Hopefully. You know, it's a ripple effect. Because it's also not good for them to be using the materials, I'm sure, and working with them on a constant basis.
And that's one of the things that I try to have them explain, because it's the same thing if you have a housekeeper at home that helps you clean your home, it's important for them to understand that it's benefiting switching to a cleaner product benefits them too, because they're the ones using the products. So same thing with the contractors.
Right. And it's something that you're going to have that's going to carry with you for so many years. And I think a lot of those big, I think about baby purchases, you know, you've got like the crib, you've got the car seat. These are things that you're going to use. They're big purchases. You're going to spend a lot of money one way or the other. So it's so important to choose safer, have like a good foundation.
Yeah. And if you have siblings, you know, if you have more children afterwards, you'll probably use them again. So yeah, the impact is definitely wide.
And so getting in there early with you and making those better decisions is so helpful. And I like that the blessing of virtual is now you probably can reach people across the country or anywhere really. So open to that? If someone
Yeah. I've worked with people all around the world, mostly are in the US, but I have worked with a couple of people in Latin America and in Europe. And it's amazing. It's, you know, it's technology has really opened the doors to that. So it's really great to be able to work with people one-on-one.
And when you're doing your consults, is there something that across the board when you meet with them that like they're just all getting wrong and they have no idea? Like, is there something that people just are not aware of that you would say?
You know, no, because it's interesting. I get people at different stages of low-tox living, which is also great to see. You know, it's not only people who are new to this. Of course, I get a lot of that, but I also get people who are very knowledgeable in general, but are getting stuck with certain key purchases, or it really depends. It really depends. Some people have a really good base, some people don't, and I meet them where they are. And so yeah, every consult is different. Everyone's different. It's really personalized, which is also pretty cool. It's really fun.
It's different. And then you mentioned that, you know, as a new mom, a lot of new moms, I certainly felt this way, felt overwhelmed. And so I think
that's one thing that's in common. I mean, just about every person who's new to this, and they're usually new moms, they're all overwhelmed, I think. Yes.
Yeah. And so not, you know, having someone to sort of help you and not to try to do it all at once, like meeting them where they're at and realizing that one change, and I'm always telling people one change can makes a difference.
It does.
And it's worse to be overwhelmed.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's many blessings to Instagram and to modern day information. There's a lot of information out there and that's great. But on the downside, it's a lot of information coming at you potentially every single day. So I think that whereas 14 years ago, I was overwhelmed by what I was learning and reading, I think a new mom today gets even more overwhelmed because there's so much more information. So what I try to help them is kind of sift through it and prioritize and also understand the big picture, which I think is really hard to do when you're just starting this journey. I mean, I know it was hard for me. You know, nowadays I have a very different perspective on low-tox living than I did 14 years ago. Really? 14 years ago, I thought it was like, I need to get rid of everything. Everything's bad. And now I realize, you know, you can't live in a bubble. And that's what I always say. You cannot live in a bubble. We have to live in society, but we can balance that. And, you know, little steps add up.
That's an excellent message. And I think being able to make the change is almost like an antidote to the overwhelm. Like you do have some control, like there is information and there are options available. It's a really important thing to let people know.
Yeah. And to move forward, I think that sometimes when you get overwhelmed, you freeze and you're like, I can't do this. I'm done. You know, this is just too hard. And some people react that way, but you know, it's just focus one step at a time, one thing at a time. And then, you know, that's where I come in and I help you prioritize. Well, what's the biggest bang for your buck, so to speak, you know, and that's going to depend on your lifestyle, on, you know, different things. It's always very different for everybody.
Makes sense. And I really want to, I think that something that can really knock out a lot of this overwhelm is your website. So I love the way that it's laid out. People can search by area of the home, by age of the child. Like, do you want to walk us through your website a little bit just so people can understand what a great resource it is? I think if I would have had this when I was pregnant, it would have been so nice. You just look at what you're wanting to replace, you look it up. So
the website has, you know, again, it has 13 years worth of information in there. There's a lot of information. So what we try to do is that we try to organize it to make it a little bit more user-friendly. And because people are coming to the website from different walks of life at different stages, you know, the idea is to help them they can search. So you can search by areas of the home. You know, is it the bathroom that I'm concerned about? Is it the kitchen? Is it the living room, the bedrooms? Or if you don't want to search, you can search by age group. Is it baby and infancy? Is it toddlerhood? Is it childhood? Is it pregnancy? Or you can actually search by toxin. You know, I want to know more about silets. I want to know more about PFAS. So that's how it's kind of laid out. There's a lot of information there. I also have a section where you can just look at like recommended products that I have kind of, you know, that I use and I recommend. And then I think those are the main sections.
Yeah. It's super helpful. And I think very organized in a way where you can take off bits and pieces and like make changes as you go. And then it's like 10 years have gone by. And if you've been making consistently changes, like when you think about you were saying, you know, a decade ago or 14 years ago, how your perspective has changed. I mean, just like your consistency over the years makes a huge difference.
And the other thing I think people get really surprised at, you know, sometimes we'll have like a partner who isn't really on board at the beginning, but through time, I mean, I'm always amazed at my husband and even at my children at this point who are older, they also absorb and they learn and they see, and it becomes kind of second nature to everybody. So you'll get to the point where it's not just you, you know, you're teaching your kids these better habits from day one. They're born into it, which is pretty amazing because they're growing up not having to learn what are better materials. They already know because you're teaching them that as they go. But also like the husbands also, at least my husband has come so far.
Yeah,
and
great.
Just, you know, little conversations and, you know, maybe we'll watch a documentary here and they come along for the ride also, which makes it easier also. So it is, you know, it's a journey. I think it's like a low tox living journey. It's not like, this sounds kind of corny, but you know, when you think like, oh, I'm going to detox, and you think of like that diet, you know, where you have to eliminate everything. But what happens with a diet? If you stop, you know, it's just so hard to keep up that you end up gaining all the weight back or whatever, right? You know, when it's a lifestyle and it's not just like a fad diet, this is a lifestyle. This is little changes that you continue, you know, they're easy to incorporate into your everyday life. And then it just becomes a habit and it becomes very natural and a very good flow to it. I don't know.
Yes, that has been my experience. Oh, I can relate to this so much because I think when I started, at least I was like, I'm going to switch everything out so that when the babies are born, it's going to be done. That is not the way that it works. And actually, I find that it spills over into all areas of your life. When you are conscious and making thoughtful decisions about what you're bringing into your home, it does impact the whole family, like you were saying, but it also just your own life. It's a fulfilling way of living, I would say.
Yeah. It's a perspective change, but once you make the change, it's just part of you.
Yeah.
You don't have to work hard at it.
It's not hard. That's right. It's just part of what you do. When you introduce something new, you check it out and it definitely is a journey. And that's such a good takeaway point. And I also get questions a lot. How do I make my partner switch or my kids? And I think the best way is, like you said, by example. Because your people that you're around, it's not about forcing somebody. It's just offering the information that's there. And when you have the research and when you have the reasoning and you understand why, I think when people understand why, they're a lot more likely to make the changes too. So
yes,
that's
yes.
A really good
point. Yeah. And I think that, you know, sharing the information, but not all at once, obviously, you know, mm-hmm. with people
planting
in your
seeds.
Life. Little seeds really goes a long way, because like you say, when you realize what some of these, you know, chemicals can do to our health, especially to children, I think people, it's hard to look away from that, let's just say. And it's science. This is not, at this point, you know, in the game, we're not talking about, you know, that crunchy mom who thinks these things. No, I mean, there is so much overwhelming research. So, you know, sometimes it's not like I'm sending the research papers to my husband or my mother or my mother-in-law, but sometimes I'll just mention, oh my gosh, look what I just read. And then, you know, mention the key points and they're amazed, you know, it does stick with them. So it is a gradual process. You can't expect everyone to just want to give up everything and switch everything overnight. And that wouldn't be healthy anyway. But if you stick to the process, it works. It works really well. And it becomes really easy for everybody.
Yeah. You know, you were saying that it is science now. And what I find interesting too, is occasionally something will come out in the news, like the mainstream news, and it'll be an echo of something that maybe you mentioned 2 years ago.
20 times.
I mean, I'm sure. Have you noticed that early in the early days, things that were considered questionable, like now are totally accepted as this is the way that it is? Like, has that been your experience?
But it's so exciting also, I think, you know, from my perspective, like lots of people know what PFAS chemicals are nowadays. These are chemicals that are, you know, traditionally we spoke about them being in nonstick pans, and then we realized they were also in water repellent fabrics. But right now, you know, we because the mainstream media has covered it so well, I think, you know, they really have covered it much more. So many more people know that it's an issue in water and in so many other products. So it's exciting to see these chemicals mentioned in mainstream media, I think, you know, we still have a long way to go. And I think there's just a lot of people who still don't know about them, but the fact that they're being mentioned, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, nothing. There was nothing. It was crickets. And then, you know, it was really, no one was talking about this.
It's so true. No one was. To see it on the news channel is exciting. Also, what it reminds me too, this is what I was thinking, whenever you learn about a chemical that might be harmful and you see studies are saying it might not be, I mean, it might be harmful. I've never seen it go the other way, like reverse. you know,
unfortunately,
if there's a reason to be skeptical, it might be worth using something that doesn't contain it if there's an available option, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good tip for everything, right? You know, if there's an available option, why not use it? You know, why not? You know, we don't want our children to be the lab rats, that we're testing these chemicals on. If we know that there's a possibility this could be harmful, but there's this other product that works just as well, let's just use the other product. Yeah.
It's a great takeaway. And I don't want to gloss, just in case there's people that are listening that haven't heard of PFAS or PFAS. Yes. Do you want to mention what those are and maybe what home products to avoid that have them, like the top ones?
Well, I mean, this is a family of chemicals, right? There's thousands, like 6,000 of them, and they're all very similar. There's slight variations, but the point is that these are chemicals that, first of all, they accumulate in our body. So once you have them in you, it's not like your body is quickly detoxifying and getting rid of them. You know, they do accumulate. Some of them can stay in you for 20 years. That's why with these particular chemicals, you really just want avoidance versus using less, you know. Now, having said that, unfortunately, these chemicals are found in almost everything nowadays at very low levels. But the products where they're traditionally found in and were traditionally used in, it was nonstick Teflon pans and pots and all kitchenware that's nonstick. You also had stain resistant and any performance fabric in terms of upholstery, for example. Curtains also traditionally have this. Waterproofing, so a lot of winter wear, rain gear will also have these chemicals. And then unfortunately, you also have it in some, and you can speak more to that, but you know, like in some makeups, like waterproof mascara is a well-known product that contains sometimes PFAS chemicals. You have them, and then now we have that there's contamination concerns, and then it can be found in some foods, in the manufacturing of processed foods also. So, you know, I think with PFAS chemicals, it's also in period products. It's also in exercise clothes. You know, there's a lot. Yeah. And I think this is one thing that can overwhelm, and it can be overwhelming to learn about PFAS. But, you know, if you avoid as much as you can, the nonstick products, the stain-free products, the performance fabrics, you know, those are some main contributors to exposure to PFAS. What do you think?
No, I think that's a great explanation. Anything that's stain resistant, that's water resistant. And then I've read, and I use particularly a water filter to reduce PFAS potentially in the water.
Because we do know that like most of the water in the United States, at least, is contaminated with PFAS.
It's just crazy, right? I mean,
it's crazy. It's at high levels in many places. Really? So you definitely, not just because of PFAS, but you want to be filtering your drinking water. That's probably one of the main and first big purchases you should make if you are doing a low tox journey.
Good. I was going to ask you that. So that's your priority just for people across the board, like regardless of where you are or your age.
Anywhere. You should be using either, I mean, there's a reverse osmosis, which is a type of water filter, which essentially takes everything out. It takes out from harmful chemicals. It also takes out beneficial minerals. So you do often want to remineralize if your filter doesn't remineralize on their own. Okay. But there's also multi-stage carbon filters have been found to be very good. And these are like under sink filters. And you'll see that you have like usually it's three stages of filtration. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that I recommend. There's other alternatives. There's a couple of countertop reverse osmosis that you could have if you know, for example, if you're renting a home and you don't want to install anything. But it's definitely, for so many reasons, one of the first purchases I would recommend. I think it's essential. And if you have children, you know, if you're preparing formula, if you're preparing food, you definitely want to be using filtered water for them.
Right. Cause you're right. Food and the drinking water, that's a lot of exposure. That's a great one.
It adds up. And then you also have, you know, you might be asking, well, what about bottled water? But bottled water isn't regulated and they don't necessarily.
Oh, that is such a good point. Yeah.
So,
wow.
So that, you know, it's generally there, it's a little bit better, but it also can contain microplastics because it's being housed in plastic bottles. It could also contain plastic chemicals because of, you know, those water bottles that are in plastic bottles. They might have been in a car and, you know, being transported, and it might have been really hot in that car. And when plastic is exposed to heat, you see the leaching potential, which means that like the chemicals in the plastic can migrate over to the water in this case.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, bottled water isn't a better solution. Filtered water is the way to go.
Filtered water is the way to go. And I think I even read once that some companies that were calling their water spring water in the plastic. So this is the leaching issue aside, it wasn't even spring water. It was actually just bottled tap water.
Tap water.
Wild.
Yes. Yeah. There's no regulation. No one needs to, you know, test or prove anything. So it's tricky with bottled water.
Yeah. And then that's, I guess it's a good point you make about the heating, that people should not be heating anything absolutely in plastic.
Ever. Yeah, that's a big source. You know, if you're still microwaving in plastic containers, that's another quick, you know, stop that. Stop it right now.
And it's pretty easy to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, buy some glass containers. That's great. Or, you know, heat in the stovetop. Great too. But stop using the microwave plastic.
Yeah. And I wanted to talk specifically about people that are expecting a new baby, because, you know, you and I both got on this when we were pregnant. So what would you tell someone in that position, like top priorities?
So I have three children, and my third, whereas the first one is 14, the third one is 1.5. So when I got pregnant with my third one, I knew so much more than I knew the first time around. So I was able to do things the way that I wanted to. And I think that what I recommend, if you can, is, you know, you really going through kind of like a detox process prior to getting pregnant. The first few months of pregnancy, which a lot of us might not even know we're pregnant yet, are actually the most important. So you ideally, and sometimes this is impossible and it's okay, you move on. But if you are planning a pregnancy, if you can spend a couple of months, 4, 5, 6 months, kind of detoxifying your body, being a little bit more strict than you normally are. And that means, you know, whereas on a normal basis, I say, you know, like balance, find that balance. If there's one shampoo that you really like, and, you know, maybe continue using that, but be strict about everything else. Well, in this period, prior to pregnancy and then during pregnancy, I like to say be as strict as possible. So really adhere to the purest, the most natural, eat organic as much as you can, you know, try to eat out less, because takeout and eating out is a big source of phthalates, which is another endocrine disrupting chemical. So nowadays processed foods is actually the main source of these plastic chemicals. And these are linked to fertility because they work on our hormones. It's specific for fertility. So if you could,
I'm
just
so glad
be strict.
You mentioned that too, for early pregnancy, because I think I read that I read Shanna Swan's book. She's the person who's done so much research on phthalates, and she emphasized that they're the most disruptive. I think in that first, there's like a couple week window in the first trimester where especially baby boys are susceptible to developmental problems from phthalate exposure.
Yeah, it's when
unbelievable they've been able to nail it down.
Exactly. It's really, and unfortunately, these are another class of chemical similar to PFAS, in that we are exposed to them through many different ways. It's not just soft plastics, you know, phthalates. We are exposed to them through anything that has artificial fragrance, because there are chemicals where if you have a product and you have the fragrance, phthalates are what allows the fragrance to kind of bind to that product. So anything that smells, you know, artificially, that has phthalates, chances are. So that's,
and eating, you know, at home is a great thing, is a great simple tip that you gave. That's a big one. Cause if, like, I think you said that this is the biggest exposure is from takeout food. And so if you can just focus on cooking at home,
fresh food. So
many benefits, even beyond.
Yeah. And it's easy, you know, it's easy, and you're probably saving money in the long run. So that's, you know, important too. So yeah. So I think, you know, prior to pregnancy, if you can do all those things and you can kind of avoid plastic as much as possible and eat organic as much as possible, and maybe just use less products in general, because I do think that that's another easy tip where, you don't need 20 products for cleaning, and maybe you don't need 20 products in terms of personal care. If you could just streamline, choose better, and choose less, that's also
100%. I think that's such a good one. Using less, we're marketed so much more than we need, just I think in general.
Yes. We need, even for babies when they're born too. Yes. We really don't need that much, you know.
I didn't use baby powder or baby lotion. I mean, there's just,
you don't need it. You don't even need soap the first couple of, you know, weeks and stuff. It's
such a good point. I actually had someone on my podcast who has a baby skincare line, and she was explaining how babies, most people don't know this, but babies don't need to be bathed every day.
They
just need to be spot clean. Like, cause they're, the vernix that they're born with is to protect their skin. We don't want to wash that off. And something that a lot of people really don't know. I found that just fascinating.
No, I think because we've been marketed that, you know, like baby shampoo and baby, you know, soaps, and it's the marketing is strong, and it's, you know, it's there. We see it every day. When you have a baby, you're like, oh, I need to buy a baby shampoo or baby body wash.
But yeah, and it's getting us attached to that nostalgia and the way that it smells and the way that it looks with that connection with babies. And I also want to ask, what about nursery? Are there any like big items to avoid or to make sure you get right for the nursery?
Yeah. So I feel, you know, for babies, children, and adults, you know, we spend so much time sleeping, right? So our bedroom really should be our sanctuary. Also, our body is detoxifying when we're sleeping. So it's really important to not have it exposed to more chemicals. And babies, of course, sleep so much more than we do, right? They spend, you know, 18 hours, sometimes 16 to 18 hours at the beginning. So, you know, I also recommend when you're designing a nursery, and obviously budget is going to have something to do with this, but, you know, focus on things that are A, close to the baby when they're sleeping, and that are large, that cover a large space. So what I mean by that is, well, priority number one for me would be the mattress. Conventional mattresses still can contain some flame retardants. They could potentially contain PFAS chemicals for waterproofing, or they might have like PVC, which you want to avoid, which is a type of plastic. So you really want to source a mattress made of certified organic cotton, wool. These are the materials you want to be using. Then, you know, next up, I'd say, well, the crib is important if you're using a crib that has, you know, plywood, which a lot of cribs are made out of plywood, they do contain low levels of formaldehyde, because what plywood is, it's like layers of wood that are kind of stuck together, right? And then the glue usually contains formaldehyde, and that'll be emitted throughout the lifetime of the product, more at the beginning. And because it's so close to the baby when they're sleeping, that's something that I recommend, you know, if you can source a solid wood, that would be ideal, you know, a solid wood crib. Next up, I think people don't think about it, but, you know, I think the flooring in your nursery is really important. Because it's just, if you're buying like a large, like area rug, if that also is full of PFAS and maybe flame retardants, and maybe it has the formaldehyde because there's a layer, you know, stuck to it on the bottom, these are all chemicals that are going to be emitted into the nursery. So that would be my next priority item, just because it's so big.
And then
moving forward, you know, then, you know, you can also think about, well, the baby sleeping on the mattress, but there's also the mattress protector. There's also the, like the bed sheets, the fitted sheet. If you can source that organic, these are all things to consider.
That's great. The more
that you can choose natural materials, the better.
Yeah. And I think that those three big ones, the mattress, the crib, and the floor, which I think people might skip over that one, are really important because they're breathing it in. It's, you know, what if consider the door is closed, whatever.
Chemicals they're breathing. I think like for flooring versus, you know, sometimes I've got asked, well, what's more important? I can only choose either flooring or the baby changer, for example. One is not going to be perfect. Which one do I choose? I usually say the flooring because A, it's larger. Usually it's closer to the crib. You know, you can always put the changer a little bit on the side. And also, if you do buy a changer that's made out of plywood, you could always allow it to like off gas outside. That just means have it outside of the nursery when you first get it, you know, open the box or whatever it comes in, and allow that smell, which is that formaldehyde kind of, to off-gas, to just go away.
That's a great tip.
The levels will be lower when you bring it inside. You can leave it outside in the garage or something for a week or two.
Oh, that's a great tip. I've said that on my Instagram too before for other items like boxes, something that you bring in that smells, always want to leave it out until it comes in. It's such a good tip.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
an easy way if you have something and you can't buy something different, it's a really good point.
Yeah. And by the way, I just want to mention, I wasn't perfect. My first crib for my 14-year-old, it was from Pottery Barn. It definitely had a little bit of formaldehyde. We did buy it about 2 months before, so likely it off-gassed a little bit before the baby was born. But it's okay if you're not perfect. You know, you learn and you move forward. You don't look back. Don't drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, because the stress is worse, right?
Yeah.
Important point.
Yeah.
Gosh, yes, that's so helpful. This is just, gosh, it's so interesting. There's so much to learn and to think about. I want to ask you one more question. If there is something that you want people that are new to this journey to take away from this conversation, what would it be?
So much, but I think that I'd leave them with the thought that, small steps do add up, and not to feel, even if they feel overwhelmed, just focus on the next step and kind of like shut everything off and just focus on the next step. And then once you're done with that, move on and, try to just focus so that it just becomes easier. And I do think that that's helpful. I think that you don't have to it's not an all or nothing. You do what you can when you can. And if you can't do it, compartmentalize it, push it to the side, and find something that you can. And that's okay. You don't have to do it all. I think that it's, you do what you can.
I love that. It's a big conception. It's either you're toxic or you're not. And that's just not true.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's funny because I'll just say it really quickly. Originally, the name of my blog was Non-Toxic Munchkin. But through the years, I realized it shouldn't be non-toxic because it's not perfect. It's really low tox. And that's what you should be striving for. So that's something that I probably learned through the years.
Interesting.
Also.
That's something that's evolved. I was going to ask you, how has what you're doing evolved since those days? And that's a good one. That's a good answer to that question. I like seeing low tox being marked, being spoken about too. And I love the way that you approach this because there is a lot of, I hate to say it, but there kind of is fear mongering. You get accused of being a fear monger, but there is a lot of that. And that's the last thing that we want to do. And so being a positive person, like you're an expert in the space, that's a positive voice for people and empowers people to live more low tox. It's excellent.
Thank you. I don't know if I mentioned, but I'll just mention it really quickly. The new company name is Three Little Plums.
I didn't even say it. Guys, everybody that's listening, Aida's website is threelittleplums.com and her Instagram is Three Little Plums. It's a number 3. So the numeral 3 and then Little Plums. But you've been Little Plums for a while now, have you?
Three Little Plums was born actually 2 days after my baby was born.
Really?
On January 1st of last year. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I love that name, by the way. It's super sweet.
Thank you.
I think everybody's going to be thrilled to see your website if they haven't seen it already, because it's an awesome resource. And thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's especially difficult. You've got a 1.5-year-old. You squeeze this in. We've been talking for almost an hour. So I really appreciate your time and everything that you're doing.
Thank you. This was a pleasure. I loved it. I could talk to you for hours. So thank you for having me.